Lower Manhattan Cultural Council offers two grants for up to $5,000 for arts projects happening anywhere in Manhattan. Whether you're a painter or a performer, an artist, organization, or a group, you can apply. www.lmcc.net.
Manhattan Community Arts Fund is for arts projects by individual artists and small nonprofit organizations.
The Fund for Creative Communities is for nonprofit.
Okay, coming up next is A Positive Mind with Armand DeMille. So stay tuned to WBAI New York 99.5 FM.
Tuesday, September.
You with the positive mind. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today, I want to talk to you about what we've been talking about for the last few days. We started talking with Sherry last week about the migraine brain. And we talked about how and what that is to difficult to be live trapped in a painful body. Then we talked about caretaking. And yesterday we had as guests David and Rhonda Traveland, who took this very aggressive stance towards trying to get people to not dedicate their lives to taking care of people. Stand by with me just a minute, friends. I have another difficulty here. Hold on, please. But, you know, here's one of the interesting things about it. The concept is feeling trapped. And that's what I'm going to talk about today, feeling trapped. David Traveland, our author yesterday that we interviewed, he talked about how important it was to extricate himself from a horrendous marriage that he was in, what he called horrendous, with someone whom he considered, he talked about her like she was hateful. Like he was, you know, like he really disliked her. And I asked a question to him. They were married 40 years. I said, when did you lose your love? The thing on which you based your marriage. And as we went on to talk, I just kept hearing over and over again the kind of anger, vituperative bitterness that he felt. So I asked the big question towards the end of the program. I said, everybody who has the kind of work that you're doing, caretakers, usually have some early childhood experience where they were caretakers. And he said, yes, he did. As a child growing up from age 15 or so, he had a mother who was schizophrenic. And he had to take care of her. At age 9, he said, he was catapulted into the role of male. There was no father around. And so from 9 till the time he left, he had to be with a mother who was suffering from schizophrenia. Now, I say schizophrenia, and by that I mean somebody who has a bizarre ideation, who sees things and hears things that aren't there, not only who is explosive, but somebody who is not even on the planet much of the time. We used to have a thing called the schizophrenic mother, which was called, you know, the mother who has this kind of schizophrenia, and then they give birth to schizophrenic children. Part of the fear that children always have when they have a schizophrenic mother is that they'll become schizophrenic themselves, because some genes have been linked between the two. But to go back to think about it, we can't make wrong of the person with schizophrenia. Just like you can't make wrong with the person who suffers. They can't be wrong. And just because a person has a psychiatric disorder, we can't wrong them for having a psychiatric disorder, just as we can't wrong them for having broken legs. They're broken. They have broken parts. All right, so we say the human mind, with love, can overcome many things. And that's part of the show we're going to talk about today. There was a research done in Australia. The editor of this paper, a social worker and psychologist, estimated that in 1995 alone, 27,000 Australian children were affected, and they had parents who were psychotic. Psychotic, that's the same as schizophrenia, meaning not living in reality. 27,000 Australian children. That would be like 270,000 American children. Maybe ill parents parent well, and not all children are affected. Maybe a parent who is bizarrely out of the world can do good parenting. Maybe they can. Maybe something takes over, you know. But up to two-thirds of these children experienced negative consequences. And amazingly, the needs of the children are largely ignored. Now, so these contributors from different disciplines address this issue of what do you do for children who grow up with parents who they don't have it all together. Not only don't they have it all together, they're falling apart, especially when it's only one parent. What do you do? Well, some important things come from the United Nations. The United Nations demands that there be a human rights. They always require addressing on the ground the basic human rights, the right of a child to grow up in the best possible environment, and the demand of the parents to have the support required to provide this environment. That's the UN Convention on the Rights of a Child, Article 18.2. There is a demand in a world agreement. We must supply our children with something decent. And there is also a demand that if the parent doesn't have that which to provide, the parent should get treatment. In some way, something should be available to them. Well, that's a nice idea, but it doesn't happen. Who brings it to their attention? There are hospitals where if a person is considered insane and put into a hospital facility, if they become pregnant somehow, which they often do, they're delivered to a hospital to have the baby. And then they're brought back to the asylum without the baby, and the baby's put up for adoption. What do you think that does to a human mind? What do you think? How does that, do you think that puts you? What position? So what I'm thinking about is, I'm thinking about where do we go as children who may have had a parent who was so debilitated that they needed us as children to take care of them. And maybe they didn't need. Maybe it was a father who was dying, who you loved. Maybe it was a mother who was powerless, who you loved. I know a man who is currently an adult man who has his life dedicated to his mother. He just simply said, "That's it, I love her. I'm going to take care of her till she dies." He's passing his whole life as he does this. Are you trapped? Is it a choice? Might it be your choice? I remember a man who had a son who had a mother who had a heart attack. And she had a heart attack, and he went to his psychiatrist, and he said to his psychiatrist, he said, "My mother had a heart attack again when she was alone." He said, "I know if I go there and stay with her, I'll at least be able to call the ambulance when the time comes." He was 30 years old. And the psychiatrist said to him, "Well, that would mean that your life is now your mother's." He said, "It's your choice. But my job is to have you choose for your own life." Well, he didn't go, and his mother died in the middle of the night. Does he fault himself for that? Is that what he was supposed to do? Trapped. We're not trapped. We make choices. But when you're a child and you're stuck with people who cannot be reasonable or kind or fair, but leave you with a sense of responsibility, boy, it's tough. Let's talk about the double blind theory. The double bind theory. Double bind. A double bind is somebody tells you something that's a lie, and you're not allowed, the second part of the double bind is you're not allowed to perceive it. So a lie is a woman breaks up with her father, a woman breaks up with her husband, the husband leaves, the mother said, "Your father's on vacation." "No, you can't call him." "No, I don't know when he's coming back." Well, where's the problem there? The problem there is you can't afford to not believe her because she's the only one left. You can't afford as a child to challenge it. You have to deal with the reality as you're presented to it. I had a case of this where a man came in who saw snow falling in front of his eyes all the time. And it's a condition. It's a psychiatric condition. He had this kind of feeling of little droplets falling in front of his eyes all the time. I took him back in a regressive analysis hypnosis. He went back to a time when he remembered being in a ski lodge with his mother. And he was with his mother, and his father had just left. And his mother was flirting with the ski instructor. And he said to his mother, "I want to go out and play with the other boys," who he saw playing out in the yard. And his mother said, "You don't want to go out there. It's too cold. It's snowing." And what he did was he remembered looking out the window and seeing snow, even though there was snow there. Because when the boys came in, he expected them to be covered with snow, and they weren't. So he remembers that oddity of seeing the snow, and then it didn't exist. But he told his mom, "Okay, I'll stay inside because it's snowing." When he and I went through that and he uncovered that there was no snow, that mom was lying to him, mom just didn't want him to go outside because she didn't want to take her attention away from the ski instruction, so she gave him a small lie. "You don't want to go out there, it's too cold." He went through that and what it meant in his mind. Why couldn't he question his mother? Well, of course, if he questioned his mother about that, he'd have to question his mother about dad. He'd have to question about where did daddy really go? What are we really doing here? He'd even have to question her love. "Do you really love me?" For a young boy, 4 years old, he couldn't afford to do that. So instead, he saw the snow falling and he developed a symptom where the snow was always falling in a way to protect his mother, his relationship with his mother. When we broke the illusion, he stopped seeing the snow. Dramatic. Truly happened. Were you trapped? As I'm talking to many of you are going to remember what it was like to have been a child who felt trapped. And then you'll find that as you are, you'll find that that same situation repeated itself in your adulthood. That somehow whatever you had back then wound up repeating itself now or in the past. So children's needs identified with their parents. What are the needs that a child has? Continuity of care. The least disruption to home and school when parents are hospitalized or removed. That's part of what you're entitled to. Explanation of the events surrounding the parent's illness. Someone available for the child to learn to trust and talk to about their fears, their guilt, their confusion. What happens when mommy's in the hospital for schizophrenia or having a mental breakdown? Who's explaining it? What's it like for a 5-year-old brain to be looking at a mommy becoming so bizarre? Programs where children can meet with other children. Parents' needs identified. The parents at that time have to have a need for continuity of a relationship with a supportive worker of some kind who keeps the parent connected to the child. A reassurance about the quality of the substitute parenting and of the parenting that they were doing. Quality care for the children almost kept in mind. This is by an outside person. A suitable place for the children to visit the parents in the hospital. If the parents are hospitalized, you got to have a good place for the kids to go. Parent support groups. Get those parents together. Have them talk to each other and have them talk about parenting. And then understanding of mental illness in the community, including in the families of the parents, their extended families. These are some of the things we could do. I'm going to take your calls today. 212-209-2900. Your calls. I want you to talk about your childhood and when you grew up feeling that something was weird and strange and how that may relate to your adult life and the choices of your adult life. While I'm doing that, let me just tell you a little bit about the parenting when you're sick. Let's say you have a mental, emotional, or even physical illness as a parent. And let's say you're a stay-at-home parent and you're sick. What do you do now for your children? The only worse thing than taking care of a sick child is being sick yourself. Or worse yet, trying to take care of a sick child when you are sick too. And you parents go through that. Illness is made more difficult for the stay-at-home parent because there usually isn't anyone else to pick up the slack if you need to stay in bed. Here are a few ideas to help you get through. Number one, take care of yourself. You know that same thing we talked about with the you're on an airplane. If you're running out of oxygen and your plane is falling, they tell you, put on your mask first. And then put on your child's mask. We need you to be well. Make sure you get enough sleep, drink enough water, and remember to take a daily multivitamin. Try to avoid drinking more than 2 or 3 cups of coffee a day, and try to stay away from alcohol when you're a sick parent. And of course, if you smoke, you're increasing the likelihood that, you know, both of you are going to suffer more miserably. The other thing is don't spread it around. If you or your child gets sick, stay home. Going out to play groups, drop-in centers, and classes will only spread the disease as if it's a disease. Take responsibility for putting that stuff around. How can you tell when your children are too sick to go out? A guy named Dr. Sears recommends that children stay home if they have a runny nose with yellow or green mucus, bloodshot eyes with a yellow discharge, or diarrhea that is explosive, mucousy, or bloody. If a child has any of that, stay home. If you're unsure about any symptoms, take the child to a doctor. Create a safe place. If you're sick, The last thing you want to do is chase your toddler through the house. You need to rest in order to get better. So create a space in your house where you can take it easy and your child can play in an enclosed, childproof area beside you. Find a safe room with a door that closes. Bring in lots of toys, books, snacks, and videos. Curl up with a blanket. Let the homework slide while you're sick. It could always be done later. Know when to ask for help. There does come a point when you're too sick to care safely for a child. If you have a flu and you can't stand up without being sick, you've been hospitalized or physically injured, both you and your child will be better off with another caregiver until you're well enough to return to full-time parenting. It's a good idea to make contact with a support network. Nobody wants to be sick, but unfortunately it happens to everyone at one time or another. It's worth planning out a sickness strategy if you're a stay-at-home parent in advance so that when you're sick, maybe you could find your backup. And then maybe when you're sick, you could focus on resting and getting better instead of trying to figure out how you will cope when your head feels like it's about to explode or your stomach takes a turn for the worse. And you mothers know what I'm talking about. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm good.
I'm going to make this quick because I'm in my car. I hope I don't lose the connection. I'm 51 years old. I have two boys of my own. As a child, I lost my mother at 8 years old. She died of cancer. I have a younger brother, 8 years younger than myself. My father was a very bad alcoholic to the point where we would have to go down to the bar and get him at night. I took care of my younger brother. We paid the bills in the house. We did odd jobs to help my father, who has since passed. And at this stage of my life, my friends, my family, they always tell me, why do you feel you have to do everything? I'll work on things with my sons. I'll let them do their own work, and when they're done, I check it. If there's five people standing around and we all say, okay, this has to be done, I'm the one that jumps to do it. And my therapist told me that I have a need because of my childhood to take charge and to perform tests on my own.
Oh, I'm so sorry I lost this call. Oh, what a pity. I'm going to give you the reason. Mother died, father was an alcoholic. Somewhere in there, you took over the responsibility for your mother. You became both mother and father to your children. To your siblings. Now, here's what happens. Why do we do it? Why do older children in particular take up this role? Because it's their way of keeping their mother. Let me explain that to you. When you're a child, you're an only child. And when you're the only child, you have your parents. You have your mother and father. You have them both. They love you. You are wonderful. You're the apple of everybody's eye. You're just like, you're the child. A new child comes along and that new child starts getting attention. How do you get back your parents' love? By becoming a surrogate parent. You become the adult. The older child becomes the second parent. And it's their way of staying attached to their family so they can be loved by their family. When somebody winds up in later life becoming a compulsive caretaker after they were when they were children because of the absence of a parent, I'm saying the following. This is your way of keeping your parent, your mother, in your heart and keeping her alive. In order for you to get past this, you have to grieve your mom. Grieve her in a way you never grieved her before. Go through the pain. Because if not, you're going to have to wind up spending the rest of your life being her. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello? Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, is that me, Armand?
Yes, it is you, Armand.
Hi, Armand. It's Jack Pyre. I called you a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yes, Jack. Hi.
Yeah, I got cut off. It's really great to get a chance. I love listening to your show. And, on this topic of being trapped, you know, there's always something, you know, that's on your show that I can identify with. Like myself, I am the youngest of four, and my three older siblings were from another father who got killed in a tragic accident after the war. And my mom remarried, and, you know, I'm like 8 years behind. I think my sister's like the closest one in age. And, you know, like I had probably one of the first real traumatic experiences I have was when I was like 9 or 10. I got molested by a neighborhood bully. And, you know, my brother and my mom, I remember we marched over to this kid's house. It happened a couple times, and finally it happened with somebody else in the neighborhood, another kid it happened to, and, you know, it just kind of got confronted once, and then nothing ever happened, and years later, you know, as I went through adolescence, you know, I got into smoking pot and things like that, and, you know, up until about 2 years ago, I finally got off of cocaine, so I'm doing good with that. But, you know, I go to AA, and I'm having trouble stopping drinking. And, you know, I'm actually, in all respects, I'm doing pretty good. Just the fact
that... No, I hear it, Jack. I hear that what you're going through and what you've come from, you've had to numb yourself. You've had to put chemistry on yourself. There was no help. There was no support. You know, there was nothing there. So you are just... You're just adjusting yourself chemically. You know you don't want to do it, but it's going to take your time, Jack. It's going to take your time. You've done an amazing amount of work for yourself so far. I mean, this is hearing that kind of a background and hearing what you went through, which, by the way, when you get to 8 years, you were an only child. See, you don't fall under the criteria of a young child. You fall under the criteria of an only child because
I was
an only child.
I was the only child of an only child, and my father was ACOA, too.
Yeah, and so there you've got that, too. So, you know, it's amazing, Jack. It's amazing when you think of the fact that you're on the radio now, probably communicating with millions of people, sharing your story in some way, how you've gotten to the point where you have at least enough peace inside you to challenge these things one at a time. It's amazing, you know what I mean? It's remarkable, the fortitude that you got. The fact that you could really pull it up, that you could be one of these survivors. For that...
Yes, you know, it's like right now, I mean, I'm going through this thing where it's like years have gone by. I'm a, you know, I do some pretty cool work. I'm a musician. I get to teach piano. I have over 20 pianos.
Wonderful.
And I love to, you know, I get to do what I love for a living. And, you know, I've recorded my own stuff and I'd like to send you some of it.
Oh, please, Jack, please send it to me with a note.
Absolutely.
Reminding me who you are, okay?
Yeah, you know...
Go to my website, The Positive Mind, and you'll find...
I know you've got limited time, but I want to get back to the...
I only have 15 seconds. Can you stay online?
Yeah, I can. I got to get my driver's license back. I'm blocked with that.
I would little wonder that you would be blocked with taking full control. Because that means full control of the driver's license.
Yes, it does.
You know. Try to stay with us. I'm going to play a little music.
Absolutely. I'll stay on.
Okay. Take a short break, and I'll be back with you in just a few minutes. This is Armand DeMille with you. I've got some music for you today I'd like you to hear. It is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. This music comes from a group of wonderful Haitian people who were in Cuba. And so I do it. You might like to hear a little Haitian-Cuban combo.
Un, dos, tres.
Cha-cha-cha por aquí, cha-cha-cha por allá. Yo te invito a bailar el cha-cha-cha. Cha-cha-cha por aquí, cha-cha-cha por allá. Yo te invito a bailar el cha-cha-cha. Cha-cha-cha por aquí, cha-cha-cha por allá. Cha-cha-cha, cha-cha-cha por aquí, cha-cha-cha por allá.
By a good friend of mine. The name of the album is called Desandan. D-E-S-A-N-D-A-N-N is the name of the group. Juan de Fay is the name of it. I'm told by a friend of mine who's in Scotland that she was in Scotland, wherever Macbeth was, and she was in there, and they had a performance there. And I just tried to get this picture of Scottish people looking at Haitian people singing Cuban music. She said it rocked the house. I can't imagine it not rocking the house. Desandan. Juan de Fay. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're talking about fairly serious stuff, but you know, it's amazing when you listen to people like Jack talk about some of the difficulties that they go through after what they've come through. And that's what I love about people. Jackie, you still with me?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Jack. So let's get through this. The driver's license. What's the story?
You know, I've had in my lifetime a number of blowouts from drugs. When I got out of, I guess I was like in my early 20s, I got out of rehab. I had a driver's license. Are they kind of make sure you're all lined up with that type of stuff? And you know, as I relapsed, all that stuff that had to do with adult life sort of fell away. And I didn't get a DWI, but I let the license expire. And I just, you know, now I ride bicycle after bicycle, and you know, which is good because it keeps me in shape. But you know, trying to get the gigs, you know, it's frustrating. You know, a lot of times I'd like to just get in the car and drive up to the mountains, and I can't do that.
So what happens? Do you have trouble getting the actual going for the license?
Well, I can't really say it's money, because that's just an excuse. It's like a block, and it's this trap that when you said the feeling of being trapped, and I could just completely identify with that. And like, you know, one of my closest friends in AA said this. He says, this license thing with you, Jack, he says, this is something, he says, it represents something deep.
Absolutely.
And it's frustrating. In fact, I even have one of the people, but
well, I'm going to say one more thing, Jack, because we have to move on.
You do.
But in your being trapped, you were trapped in such a way in childhood as to be taking care of who? Who are you taking care of?
You know, that's hard. I mean, both my parents seemed fairly well-rounded.
Your dad being more of a...
He was ACOA, but I didn't know that at the time.
What about your mom?
Mom was... She's the powerhouse. I mean, she's still around. She goes to church every morning, sings in the choir. I mean, she's...
Well, there you kind of put it right at my... at my feet just now. Your mother is the house of power.
She sure
is. A car is the house of power. So, you know, this is what we're saying you're reluctant to do. You are reluctant to make your own house of power. And I would say in some way you're holding on to mom as the powerhouse, keeping yourself attached by bicycle, you know? And that what you really have to do is relinquish her. It's time to let her go. That's where I think your thinking should go. I think your thinking should go to the fact that you are holding on to mom in the worst way possible, in the best way possible, in the worst way possible, but
yeah,
you've
wow.
got to let her go.
Well, the next time I go to my holistic healer, I'm going to bring up the subject.
Bring the issue
up. Absolutely. This is fantastic. And Armand, just you have a great show. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. You're a great public service to New York.
Thank you, Jack. And you are a powerhouse.
And I won't forget to send you a copy of my disc, too.
Please do.
Absolutely, Armand. Have a great day.
Drive it over.
Oh, yeah. You're funny.
Bye-bye.
Take care, buddy.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're talking about people who are trapped and feel trapped in situations that have felt trapped as children coming on to their adulthood, taking your calls. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand.
Hello.
It's amazing because I didn't want you to get, I didn't want to get through what I did. I'm great.
You know, a lot of people talk about that. I didn't want to get through because it's a little scary.
One side pushed me and the other side, but the topic is amazing because I was molested by uncles, mother, boyfriends, two half brothers, and it was eight of us. I was the third one. And my father was an alcoholic. He left at five. I saw him break two knives on my mother. And after that.
What do you
happened,
mean break two knives on your mother?
He cut her. And when he opened the bathroom door, I guess struggling with him. The knives was broke, the handles was broke off them. And I was a kid, I put two paint cans on top of each other, and I hated myself so many years because I could not get that lock off, that I couldn't reach it, you know, and he was just beating her, and I just could not reach that. My hands
were
so
sore. What's your name?
What's I call your name? My name Ron.
Ron, right?
He's dead. He's dead now. And
okay, but wait, Ron. I got to get this image. You're a little kid.
Yeah.
You hear your mother being beaten.
I see her and I hear
her. And stabbed, and you see it.
Yeah.
And you want to get inside a door. And you put a paint can, and you stand on it to reach it, and you can't reach it. So you put another paint can on it.
Yeah.
And you can't get inside, and you're screaming, "Stop, Daddy, stop, Daddy, stop."
It was just hearing her scream.
What?
Yeah. It was just hearing her scream. She was hollering, "My children. My children," and, so anyway, the next morning it was a neighbor. The lady didn't recognize my mother when she opened the door, but she had been on the bathroom floor because he had hit her head on the tub, you know, anyway. And so as we moved about 5 years old, you know, we moved and, she finally left and we had to go to court and everything. And, then she got on like, pills to sleep and everything, and so it became hell because it was eight of us, and I'm like the third one, and I had to take care of her. I had to miss school. I had to take care of the brothers and sisters, and she would be sick all the time, and, you know, she would have to, you know, go to the hospital and stay for the nurse because, you know, in those days, they had on sleeping pills, water pills, diet pills, just everything. And so I was being molested by one of her boyfriends. And, one day I just went off because I wanted him out of the house. And what had hurt me, which I understand a lot now, why I broke out a lot of things, but what had hurt me was the fact that I got put away and he was able to stay. And when I got back home, she begged me to ask him to not leave her. And I had to go as a kid to go beg this man because she was in the room crying. And it was, you know, it was just one thing after another. But what I'm saying, what helped me, Armand, is the fact that what my father did, writing and reading helped me a lot. I decided to go the opposite direction. Whatever he did, so I never got into drugs. I never got into drinking, but I used to cry for my mother and my brothers and sisters, and I never cried for myself. You know what I'm saying? And,
you know, part of the reason why you didn't want to get on this phone? Because those tears are very close.
Yeah.
Because you could feel it, Ron.
Yeah.
Because you never cried for yourself. You poor kid.
Yeah. And so now I'm just trying to, you know, not see the, her pain anymore, you know, and my brothers and sisters, you know, because most of them got on drugs, and I just...
Oh, man, you know, how did you do it?
I don't know. I'm grateful. I just say the reading and just
hey,
imagining.
Ron, next in October, we're going to offer, during this fun drive, we're going to offer a consultation with me that's at a discounted price. I want you to get one of those. I want you to be with me. I want to hold your hand one day, and I want to take you down. I want to fix this. I want to get the one piece that you're missing. You know? And I know it's hard for you to make that phone call today, but your heart's so ready for the next step.
Can I tell you one quick thing?
Omar? Sure.
The funniest thing is growing up, all my dreams was about my mother. She was being burned to a crisp. By the time I got, she was just turned to ashes. And that stopped as I got older. But there was this little boy that was always in the dark. I was on this dark street. And he would never, after I got grown, I would have this dream. He would never come to me, ever. And I would, under this light, he would talk to me, but I never got to see him. But, like 2 years ago, he finally came out. And so in the dream, I told him I would never let anybody hurt him again and that he could trust me, you know. And as he walked up, it was because it was me. It was me.
Of course.
And then he, you know, he let me pick him up. And he let me hug him. And as I hugged him, he went inside of me. You know. And so now
What did you say to him?
I told him I would protect him. I wouldn't let anybody else hurt him.
Say it out loud. I will protect you.
Yeah, and so after
and
I did that.
I'll never let anybody else hurt you.
Yeah.
And what is he? He must be skeptical. He must not trust anybody.
Well, he let me pick him up. And when I picked him up to hug him, he just went inside me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can understand what a lot of people go through. And it helps me be able to understand, even that I'm crying, but I can understand because I was never really a child. I mean, I never really was.
Yeah.
You know, so
and
I'm just
are.
Grateful that
and
I was
you
able
are,
to.
Ron. And you are, and so am I.
Yeah.
We keep it alive.
I just want to thank you, Lamar. Okay.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Probably everybody's sobbing in the studio. We have any callers up there? Hi there, you're on the air. Hello? Well, they don't know they're on the air. Could you let them know? Take a different caller then. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Armand?
Yes.
I don't know if this may be a little off topic. I just, I have two children. They're 8 years old and 6 years old. And I've been married for 13 years. And my wife just recently presented me that she wanted a divorce for some reason. So I'm just trying to decide on the right thing to do for my children. I'm trying to keep them in a home as long as I can. You know, they love me a lot. They, you know, I'm always in their lives. And my wife seems to be more focused on her needs than the kids' needs.
Have the two of you sought out any counseling?
I tried to. I went myself, and then they wanted me to bring my wife there. My wife basically went there to tell the therapist that she didn't want to proceed with any type of fixing of the problem. So I'm kind of at my wit's end because I'm trying to keep my kids in the home. They don't know what's going on. They're happy when they're home. They want to always spend time with me. I'm always with them all the time at night, you know.
Well, if your wife wants a divorce and you don't want to leave the home,
right?
What happens then? What if you don't grant the divorce and you stay at home with your children? What happens?
Then we just, you know, my kids are intact in the home where they I feel they're more secure in their home.
So what's wrong with that?
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to find out. Because
I know I have Stephanie Dombra here who's done enough research on this as well. Researching, Stephanie, let me get you on the phone here. What do you think? Stephanie's worked with people like this. Here. Is it possible, Stephanie? Okay, but you could hear me. Is it possible to be able to refuse to take a divorce and still live in the home?
Well, first of all, as you read earlier about what the UN was saying, that a child has the right to continuity, structure, and I think that's why people get so concerned that they have to separate two, you know, put the kids into two homes. So, first of all, yes, he has as many rights as the mother, and he can seriously request having custody. Maybe she really doesn't want to right now, be a mom right now. Or
maybe
a wife.
She has something else happening,
yeah,
where she wants to just be out, maybe be with somebody else.
So not to act impulsively is my first suggestion. Just wait this out a little bit.
Answer for you. You don't have to start answering. You don't have to start. Thank you, Stephanie. And, you know, maybe you can just take a little more time until you get to the basis of this. And you might find it has to do with other relationships or something like that. But, you know, if you're convinced, what's your name? Are you there? Okay, but if you're convinced this is what you want to do, then stick in there. Stick in there. Let's take another call. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. It's not so easy. 212-209-2900. Do we hear a caller, Ken? Okay, just tell them to say hello. I'm on the air listening to talking to them, and they're not hearing me. Yeah, I know they do, but they don't, obviously. Hi, you're on the air. Could you speak up? Ken, would you pick them up and tell them to start speaking? I have to disconnect them. Yeah, I know it doesn't work. We're doing some different engineering here today. Go to another caller. Hello, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Yeah, I can't hear any of the callers.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Armand, how you doing? This is Romello.
Armando?
Romello.
Romello. Hi, Romello.
How you doing?
Good. How about you?
I'm good. I always listen to the show. I'm a huge fan. I was just listening to the topic, and I'm trying to see how I relate to it. Well, I just recently got married, and I'm about to have a daughter. And sometimes I kind of stray. And the people that I seem to get involved with is always like...
Can you talk a little louder, Romello? Just a little louder.
Yeah, is that better?
Yeah, that's much better.
All right. Some of the people that I've been getting involved with, I don't know, they kind of come up with these stories that they're pregnant or whatever. And I sometimes I feel trapped, like they're trying to trap me. Because they already know the situation.
Well, okay, but let's start over again, Romello. You have your whole life been an escape artist. When you were a kid, you found that the best way to be in life was to not be in one place for too long. Isn't that right?
Not to be in one place too long?
That's right. I bet you owned great sneakers.
I don't know. I was... it was kind of stable, I would say, because I didn't move from where I grew up at until like 18 years and uptown.
Why were you stuck? Why were you stuck for 18 years in one location? You mean you were a good boy all the time?
I was good. I mean, not that I wouldn't get caught.
You didn't get caught. I think I'm asking you. I'm asking you about the things you didn't get caught doing. You see, you're somebody with many appetites. And what happens, in a way, is you attract people who are trying to hold on to you. Now, I know a lot of people who do this. They attract people who grab at them.
Mm-hmm.
And you get so used to it that people are saying, I need more, I need more, I want this from you, I want that from you, I gotta have this from you, I gotta have that from you. Because when you're close to them, you tell them you are the world. You're everything to me. Because that's your way of being close to them. And then they say, give me more, give me more, give me more. But this is all a setup. This is all your way of staying strong, of staying free. You build a noose and you break out of it. You are not going with people who are very clearly not going to grab at you. So I'm saying to you, Romello, this is part of your act. This is what you do. And I say it with all due respect. There's a place. You're a married guy recently. You're young, about to have a baby, and you're scared. And you don't know this is all the reaction of fear. So you're running from person to person for some kind of affection. You're trying to learn what it's like to be in this world. I strongly recommend to you that you get a series of CDs called the Men's Series, which I have here at my office. This is, if anybody ever needed this, Romello needs it. You know, it's a beautiful thing,
yeah,
because you're lost.
Is it on the website?
No, call my office, you'll find it.
Oh.
The other thing, too, I want to say to you, Romello, is get ready for some physical changes. When you become a father, your body's going to change. And you're going to find something happens in your interaction with your child. I hope it's an exquisite thing that pulls you all together, because that's what happens to some men. Just get ready for a change. And also keep in mind that while your wife is giving birth, she may be turned off to you. Physically turned off, she may not want to be making love with you, she may not feel attracted, or you may not feel attracted to her. That disappears after about 3 months, after the child is born. So all of that, you know, you're in a very important time in your life, and I say to you, this is the time when you can make some real difference. You know, this is a good time. I wish you well, my friend. If I could be any help,
thanks a lot.
Please feel free to get in touch, sure.
All right.
Thank you. So I guess we had all men today, huh? And that the phone didn't allow the women to call. 212. Well, we don't have any time for any more callers. Well, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. That was a very heartfelt show. Deep and down to the quick, but that's what we do. We got all kinds of things arranged for you coming up over the next few weeks. Special interviews. Oh, some stuff about dopamine that'll knock you out. Special interviews and guests and things. Be sure to stay tuned with us and follow us on the website, thepositivemind.com. I will be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. Special thanks to all of you and our engineer and everybody else who's tried to keep things together. My heart to Michael.
WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City.
Cosmic Debris, Sunday mornings, 5 to 6 a.m. Music, sound, spoken word, the bird of the week, sonic surprises. Cosmic Debris, 5 a.m. Sundays on WBAI New York.
This is Ethan Young, the local election supervisor for WBAI. The WBAI local station board election is underway. WBAI members are voting to fill 9 board seats, choosing from 41 listener candidates. You can hear candidates' campaign statements on WBAI at 7:55 a.m., 2:55 p.m., 5:55 p.m., and 10:55 p.m. And the first public candidates' forum will take place on Thursday, September 10th at 7 p.m. at the African American Museum in Hempstead, Long Island, 110 North Franklin, 2 blocks west and 1 block south of the Long Island Railroad. For more information, go to our website, www.wbai.org.
Join World Can't Wait and other activists on Saturday, September 12th in a protest to shut down the Army Experience Center, a high-tech violent video recruitment gaming arcade located in the Franklin Mills Mall outside of Philadelphia. Recruiters are teaching 13-year-olds how to kill by handing them M16s and getting them to sit in Apache helicopters while they shoot the bad guys. Right now, it's only one of a kind. Stop it from spreading. Come out, come protest. Call 917-520-0767 or visit shutdowntheaec.net for more information on the day's action and rides from New York City. That's shutdowntheaec.net or worldcan'twait.org. The world can't wait.
Happy 65th birthday, Leonard Peltier. Free the Cuban Five, 11 years of unjust incarceration, and celebrate the 10th anniversary of the release of the Puerto Rican political prisoners. Join the September 12th Coalition as we celebrate these amazing milestones in the movement to free all political prisoners. Come hear from a representative of the Cuban mission to the United Nations, attorney Mike Kuzma, and former Puerto Rican political prisoner Dilcia Pagan. Culture will be provided by Teocas and Ghost Horse and the amazing Mahina Movement. Join us Saturday, September 12th at 7 p.m. at Judson Memorial Church Assembly Hall, located at 239 Thompson Street in the Village. For more information, call 718-853-0893. That's 718-853-0893.
Yet somewhere lingers the stubborn hope, thus to endure can be a kind of fight. Join actor-writer Viney Burroughs, poet Sonia Sanchez, and many more September 18th when the War Resisters League gives its 2009 Peace Award to South African poet and anti-apartheid activist Dennis Brutus and two groups that embody the stubborn hope Brutus described, Women of Zimbabwe Arise and Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe. Come for an African dinner, Shona music, poetry, and solidarity. 7 p.m. September 18th at Judson Memorial Church, 55 Washington Square South. For more information, visit warresisters.org or call 212-228-0450. That's 212-228-0450.
And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. And coming up real soon is Luis Reyes Rivera. And that is followed by, at 3 o'clock, Hugh Hamilton, who is back.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.